Hi, and welcome to the RUP podcast. I'm James Roycroft Davis, and I founded this podcast after I recently found myself in a rut, feeling like I was never going to come out. But I did, because I started talking about how I felt. This podcast features mostly men's stories about getting into a rut, what it was like being there, but most importantly, how they got out of it.
This week on the RUP, I sit down with an old friend, Daz Clark, who talks openly for the first time about his long battle with depression and anxiety at uni and beyond. Daz's grandmother passed away suddenly at university, and he had his sights set on moving to Spain to live near her and start a new life. But that came crashing down after her death, and his mental health spiraled out of control. This started a very long, painful, but in the end quite fulfilling journey of discovering who Daz Clark is and what Daz Clark really wants. This episode details his journey, and there are some very, very interesting takeaways here because Daz has done a lot of work on himself. I love doing this one to Daz because he's also an all-round top bloke and a great friend. So here's Daz's story, and please leave all judgment at the door.
Hey mate, welcome to the RUP. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm very, very good. Especially enjoying the sunshine recently.
It's been unreal this week.
I know.
Unreal this week, yeah, so nice.
Daz, we've known each other for a long, long time, actually. And I hadn't really known about your mental health issues, but we went to uni, and when you dropped out of uni, I thought there was something suspicious going on there, but we kind of lost contact. So it was amazing that you reached out again to say you saw the rut, and we've been able to be put back in contact. Ask everybody this question when they come on. Why did you want to come on in the first place?
So I've been approached a couple of times in the past about telling my story. But just in all honesty, I didn't think anybody would be interested. And I've like probably told all my friends like 100-150 times. They've heard it so many times, and I've told everybody who I wanted to hear it. And then one of my mates keeps saying to me about going into therapy and becoming a therapist, and being a counselor, but it's quite a long road and I've never really got into it. And then I did think maybe I should be doing something, whether it be for charity or just something. And then literally that week, I saw your post on LinkedIn and I was like, well, if I can help a mate out and do what I've wanted to do at the same time, then yeah, count me in. So yeah, I'm hoping I can, even if one person hears my story and thinks, shit, that sounds like something that I'm going through or something like that, and then they go and get help, then we've succeeded, right?
Absolutely. Unbelievable, mate. What's your story? It's an interesting one through going through uni, your relationship with your nan. So how did it all start?
So when I went to university, I joined 4 years before you did, 3 years before you did, to study law with Spanish. My nan, who was pretty much, people have different relationships with their nan, but my nan was pretty much like my best mate. And my idea was that I would get a law with Spanish degree and then I would go to Spain to live and be near her.
She was in Spain.
She moved to Spain. Yeah. And then in the Christmas of my, just after New Year of my second year, she died. And sort of from there just spiraled out of control. I didn't really know that this was the catalyst to start with. It's only since going to therapy and pinpoint, you know, when you go, they sort of pinpoint where they think it all started, because you really do need to get to the root of it.
I just want to before we move into that, I just want to paint a picture as to what Daz Clark was like before uni, growing up through school, no real apparent issues with mental health, apart from obviously, I don't know, anxiety about friendship groups, which is obviously natural with most people.
Yeah.
But let's paint a picture of you before that time.
Like just very, very chilled out. I was once criticized that if I was any more laid back, I'd be horizontal. This is before uni. So yeah, very, very chilled out, really happy-go-lucky, like never had any issues. Like some stuff went on in my childhood, but it just didn't affect me. It was just like water off a duck's back. And yeah, just like really unbothered by most things. Never really got cross about stuff. Never like majorly upset about anything that wasn't natural. Obviously football used to get me down, but part and parcel of being a Spurs fan. So yeah, like, yeah, like before uni really, like I was absolutely fine. Took enjoyment out of like everything pretty much.
Yeah.
And then at uni that sort of all changed a bit.
So it changed when your nan died suddenly.
Uh-huh.
Talk me through that experience. Where were you and how did that happen?
So I think I was going during my second year, I was going back home for a weekend or something like that. And my mum told me in the car home, oh yeah, Nan has cancer. And I was like, okay. And I was with my girlfriend at the time. And she was like, look, she's going to be fine. And I get my gut instinct told me that she wasn't, but I just sort of buried it. And then shortly after New Year, which I think was like a couple of months later, it's sort of a bit hazy. That quite a lot of that time in my life is a bit hazy. Mm. She went in for chemotherapy and just didn't come out. She'd had a heart attack on the table. In Spain. So that was that. And then...
what was it like finding out the news?
Horrendous. Absolutely awful. Like, I'm quite an affectionate person. And I just didn't want to be touched. I just wanted to... it was just completely the opposite of what I'm like normally. Like I'm quite a huggy and I didn't want to be around anyone. I just wanted to be on my own and to, yeah, just cry. And I did cry for days. Probably quite a mistake I had was it was like a few days before term was due to start at uni again.
Mm.
And I'd rushed back basically. Which was probably a mistake in hindsight.
Why?
I hadn't finished grieving. I mean, you know what it's like. You were there, you go back, and then, like, yeah. you're thrust into parties and just... Lad culture was quite a big thing, wasn't it? So to be thrust back into when really all I wanted to do was sit by myself, and I lived with seven other lads at the time, and putting on a brave face for them, like, to be fair to them, they were phenomenal and they were like great, but I didn't really want to show that I was hurting at all, so I just went and put a brave face on. And then, you know, you're out, like, you'll know, like, you land back in Nottingham and then you're out, like, yeah. 3-4 times a week, like ocean rolls round. I'm feeling absolutely horrendous, but hey, don't worry, I'm dressed like a Smurf.
Yeah. or going to stealth on a Saturday night.
Yeah, or like the SU that was, this was before the SU changed. Like the SU was just like carnage, and it's just like sugary, horrible booze, and it's just relentless. And then I just sort of spiraled from there, really. I was like sleeping pretty much all day. And I was just like, just foul, like really, really foul. Like I was like really like angry at everyone and everything.
What do you think you're angry about?
So I actually know, because my therapist... So they said, they don't tell you, but they ask the questions until you get to it. And I was angry. Anger is a secondary emotion, the primary of which is sadness. And I was sad because I'd lost, in the words that my therapist made me say, is I'd lost everything, because I was at university to study Spanish, to move to Spain, to be close to my nan, and now she wasn't there anymore. So why am I here? I wasn't loving, so I changed courses in first year because I didn't enjoy law. And I went back to do Spanish and international relations. But in the second year, I was only doing the Spanish part because I'd I didn't need to worry about the international relations bit. So I was like, why am I going to Spanish classes when I don't want to go to Spain anymore? But I mean, in hindsight, I probably should have left and called it a day then. But I just kept going back because I wanted to be close to my friends. Like they're unreal. Like I'm still like best mates with them now, like a phenomenal, phenomenal bunch. But I just kept going and you know what it's like I was just distracted because it was always something to do. I just kept thinking if I just keep going and partying, then it'll be fun. And
were you becoming more and more angry?
100%. Yeah. The less the more that I didn't deal with it, the shitter I felt. But because I was masking it with, I just papered over quite a gaping hole with I'm going out now for I'm going out. And you know, like as you know, there's always something on. Like every single night of the week, I could have gone out if I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I'd amassed like quite a big circle of friends in my second year. And so if one set of friends didn't want to go out, I could go out with a different set of friends. And there was always someone for me to see and always something for me to do. And so I just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And then that sort of went into my third year. I was just hadn't dealt with it. And it was sort
what was
of
manifest- the overriding what was the overriding feelings towards in that period? Obviously we've got it sounds like actually you didn't really allow yourself to grieve properly at all.
Definitely not.
And then obviously the anger kicks in.
Yeah. What happened at uni is I was sleeping a lot. I was getting up at like 2 PM and then I was going for a nap at 2:45 because I was exhausted. And I was only, I'd stopped going out as much. I was probably only going out twice a week at the time. But I was just shattered the entire time. And then when I eventually could get up, I just had the ump with everything. But because it wasn't such a conversation at uni about, it's not that long ago, but there was, people didn't know what mental health was even back then, even 7-8 years ago.
No.
I just thought this was my personality and how I developed as a person. I was like, okay, this is who I am. And then it was only when I came home, in fourth year, I mean, you were there in the freshers week and I'm like, oh, look at me. I'm a party. But it's all like a facade. I was playing, it got to, I think by the time fourth year came around, I was playing this character that I'd built that I thought was me, who was super fun like I used to be. But in reality, it was all like terrible. Like I wasn't looking after my body. Like I was having sausage rolls for like lunch and dinner. It was just awful. Like sleeping all the time, not going to uni because I didn't necessarily enjoy my course. And there's no point in me going to learn Spanish because I'm not going to Spain now. So it was just really bad. And then it got to a point where I said to my mum, like, I need to see you. Like, can I come home? She's like, I'm going to come to you. So she came to me and I was like covered in like eczema where I hadn't been like cleaning my bed sheets and not looking after myself. And I'd put on so much weight and like, I was just awful. And I just looked at her and was like, Mum, I need to come home. And she was like, okay, like how long for? I was like, no, like I'm done. This is done. I don't need to finish. I need to come home and sort my life out. Like whatever that is, if that means I have to go and do any job, anything, I need to give this up. I need to get away from here like now. And I thought she would put up a fight, but she just went, okay. She took one look at me, she's like, okay. And we packed and we went. It was like a Thursday. We just packed and went. And I said to the boys, I'll be back in a couple of weeks. But
I never came back.
No, okay. Yeah, I came back for like the odd thing, but I never came back to study. And I called uni and was like, oh, by the way, I'm not coming in anymore. Like, I'm done. And they were like, and there was like a whole process. And I was like, I need you to just take care of it for me. I don't want to come and de-enroll, whatever it is. Like, So yeah, sadly, although uni was a lot of fun, I can't really be in the city of Nottingham at all, because I'm just, every time I go there, I've been back a few times since, but as soon as I get there, I'm like taken back, and I'm like, oh no, I hate it. So yeah.
Now know that, well, it sounds like you were battling, obviously, grief, anger, what then resulted really into now knowing it's probably depression.
Definitely.
How would you describe depression to you?
So I've had it three times, I would say. And the first time it felt just like I was a different person, like I wasn't myself. As I said at the time, I thought that was who I was now. And I just had the hump with like pretty much everything going to the hump. And I'd let small things bother me, which in hindsight, these things just don't matter. Then the second time was pretty much a repetition of the first time. Everything wound me up. Like small things, like if I let someone go in the car and they didn't say thank you, I'd be like, oh, well, you're welcome. Just there's no need for it. Just calm down. And then the third time, it was accompanied with anxiety and a little bit of panic disorder. And that felt like constant fear. But it's not like, oh, I'm scared of this big dog or whatever. It was, oh, God, did I say thank you in the right way to that lady in the shop? Or, oh my God, did that person think I was rude because I didn't let them come through the door first? Or, oh my God, does that person think I'm looking at them? Or, like, you'll be chatting to one of your mates. I used to chat to in a group of my mates, and then I'd text my best friends, like, was I out of order then? And he was like, no. I'd be like, oh, it just felt like they were taking what I said in the wrong way. And he was like, no, like, nobody said. That accompanied itself with like worthlessness. I think one of the overriding emotions throughout all of it was that I just felt like I wasn't good enough for anything.
That's really interesting. I want to move into the worthlessness, the not being good enough, and the anxiety in a sec. But give me a bit of context into the third rut you found yourself in, and have you explored why that came about?
Yeah, so the third rut, which was the most recent, that ended about 18 months ago, that came from anxiety, and I believe that set of anxiety, because I think a lot of depression stems from this as well. It comes from a sense of low self-esteem. So I was in quite a toxic relationship at the time, and I just felt like the sun shined out of this person's backside, and pretty much everything they said was true. And they said some stuff, to be honest, like in hindsight, I should have just ignored it, because me now, if somebody said the things that they said now, I'd be like, okay, like I just wouldn't care. But at the time, I was quite hypersensitive, and I was taking things in, like this person said that I lacked ambition and stuff like that. And then that gets to you, you're like, oh my God, do I lack ambition? Like in actual fact, no, I didn't lack ambition. I'd been in the same job for a little while, but I was trying to sort my head out. So I couldn't really move on into a bigger role or a different job until such time as my mental health was as it should be. So I just come out of a really toxic relationship, and I do feel like that is when I hit maybe rock bottom after a few months of trying to sort myself out. But I just didn't, it's going to sound terrible, I just didn't want to be alive. But I'll wake up every day and think, right, another day of this shit. And it was like that for maybe 2 or 3 months, where I just wake up and think, I just don't want to look at anyone. I don't want to, and things would wind me up. And this, do you know what is sad as well? Because England were doing really well in the Football World Cup, and I just wasn't enjoying it as I should have been. Like everybody was like euphoric and bouncing around me. And I was just like, yeah, this is fine, but it's just football. And that's not who I am at all. I should have been buzzing about that. But it's just a feeling of emptiness.
From the toxic relationship.
I think it would be unfair to put it all onto someone else.
Of course.
If somebody is making you, or if something that somebody is doing is making you feel shit, then that's something that you have to deal with is a reflection on where you are. Because me now is as like feeling a lot stronger, and like, okay, I just wouldn't let, like, I don't, like, if somebody has a negative opinion of me now and they tell me, I just think it's a reflection on them. Like, if you've got a negative opinion, like, why don't you just keep it to yourself? Like, it's not, and it's not true. A lot of, like, you'll know, like, when you are feeling down and when you're anxious and when you're in the rut, you think that everything you're thinking is true.
Absolutely.
But in reality, no thoughts are real.
No.
And that's like a huge, like, when I had that explained to me, and I was like reading a book, or I was like listening to a podcast, it might have been Russell Brown or something. And it was just like, just because you think it doesn't mean it's true. In fact, everything you think, none of it is true. They're just thoughts.
It's the epicenter of anxiety disorders. I'm still going through it myself, actually. This morning I've been anxious, the last 3 to 4 weeks I've been very, very anxious and had to see a therapist because of it, purely because people who don't suffer from this disorder or don't suffer from anxiety holistically and generally will allow thoughts to come into their head, and it's almost like a shooting star motion across the sky, right? Thought will come in, it will be processed, it won't be picked apart, and it won't be it won't take a stranglehold on your psyche, and then it will shoot across the other side of your brain and it will be released. But for me, taking in a thought, I then have to pick it apart, and I then have to give it the energy that I believe it deserves, because actually that's what I've begun to think of myself as, and I then take that on as a belief system, and it can be anything, and it's the most frustrating thing in the world. But yeah, it's a really, really tough thing to.
Yeah, it is. Do you meditate?
Yeah, I've got back into meditation over the last 2 weeks, having come off the back of speaking to my therapist every other day. Cost me an awful lot of money, but it's a story for another day. But
yeah,
meditation's been fantastic, actually. You clearly do.
Every day, every day, even if it's just for 5 minutes. I just, like, all you really need to do is concentrate on your breathing, and then every time you think something, you just observe it instead of making a judgment or engaging in it.
But what does that mean? Because this is something I've been trying to explore a bit more. Is it's almost often counterintuitive, right? It's okay. Well, how do you just observe a thought? How don't you engage with it?
So when I first started to learn, my first therapist taught me this technique, which is good for as a starting technique. And then there are other, it doesn't matter how you look at them. There's loads and loads of ways you can do it. But so the first way that I did it was I would concentrate, close my eyes and concentrate on my breathing and feel my, be very, very aware that you're breathing. That's step one. So whether you have your hands on your stomach, you feel it coming in and out, or you can feel it coming in and out of your nose or through your mouth, just feel the breath. And then in your mind, imagine you're walking down the street, a crowded street. And every one of these people, or every one of your intrusive thoughts, is somebody who's, say you're on Oxford Street and is heaving. What all of your intrusive thoughts are people. And instead of engaging them, you'll just walk past them. So in your mind, just walk past them. And then once you've sort of practiced doing that, that's one way of doing it. Or I imagine that I picture myself sat on a hill, and every intrusive thought is a cloud, and it comes over. And instead of engaging with that cloud, I'll just move on, and I'll just think about the, instead of looking at the cloud and thinking about the cloud, I'll think about the blue sky that's next to it. And then the cloud passes. And then another thought might come in, and it might even be a good thought, but that's not the point of meditation. You just observe that is a thought. And then you let that go. And you only need to do it for 5 minutes. I mean, I have meditated for like up to an hour and a half, and it's really, really good.
I did that the other day, actually.
Yeah.
It was a Yeah, my girlfriend came in and she was like, "You've been here for almost 2 hours. What's going on?" I'm like, I'm just enjoying chilling."
Yeah.
but when you've had a period, like I've gone on an extended period of like 3 weeks now where every single hour has been filled with anxiety and this feeling at the pit of my stomach. The feeling of not having that feeling is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's euphoric, right? It's euphoric.
Yeah, it is. It's like fucking hell. Wow. I'm out of the woods.
And what is it that you're feeling anxious about?
I think a variety of different things, really. I think this podcast gives me anxiety. I've got a warped view of success, which has been conditioned into me as I've evolved as a human over the last 26 years, and that's been unhelpful. I rarely live in the present. I'm either sad about the past, or I'm worried about something I've done in the past, or I'm worried about the future, and that breeds a person who really struggles to be themselves right now and is often not quite in the room. And that's been really difficult because I've kind of come to...
Do you feel like you've learned lessons from your past?
Not as many as I'd like.
Okay, but it doesn't matter. And basically anything you're feeling anxious about that you've done or that's been and gone, you cannot now change. So why worry?
No.
You know, when I think about some of the way that I behaved when I was depressed, particularly towards like my friends, and just being a bit of a dick, like it's awful. Like it's not the same person I am. And I regret those actions, but I can't change them. So there's nothing to what, like, there's nothing I can do to worry, like, that can fix it. And then in terms of worrying about the future, like, it's not happened yet.
No.
And also you don't know what's going to happen. Fortunately, we can't see into the future, because if we could see it, you know, you'd probably try and change it. But, you know, a lesson that I learned in therapy is write down everything you're worried about. If you can fix it straight away, then go and fix it. If you can't, it doesn't matter. It takes a lot of practice to look at that and go, oh God, it doesn't matter. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Like I used to get worried about, oh God, I haven't got, you know, it's 11 o'clock at night, I'm about to go to bed. I haven't got any like squash for tomorrow. Or like, what are you worried about? Just have water. Or like, don't worry, because in the morning you can go and get some. Or, oh my God, my shirt's not ironed. And oh my God. Okay, well, I can fix that. I can go and iron it if that will help me sleep. But you can't, like, it's easy for me to say now, but there's no point in worrying about definitely the past, because it's been and gone. And in all honesty, I think, you know, the things you're worried about, nobody else is thinking about, probably.
No. And that's another huge thing, isn't it? It's
being
able to disseminate that thought process back down to, well, to be honest, nobody really cares.
No.
Your brain, your mind, your cognitive processes. Let's explore the feeling of worthlessness.
Yeah,
because it's something that has come up with me a lot of times in my therapy. Have you explored where that feeling has come from, where that belief system started from, and then how it's manifested itself?
Just from having low self-esteem and comparing my situation to other people's situations and then ruining the fact that my situation isn't better.
And what situation is that?
Some of my mates were earning, well, if they still do, like some of them earn quite a bit more than me. And at the time, I think because I'd come out of uni without a degree, all of my mates were graduating and getting really good jobs. And I was like, fucking hell, I'm still in the pub. But there's, you know, it was just because I was comparing myself to them. A guy I was friends with during one of the probably the final rut, is, I think, I don't know, I'm not friends with him anymore, but it was earning like a small fortune for someone of our age. Like, it was ridiculous. But I was just like comparing myself to him, and I was like, fucking hell, like, money isn't an object to him. Like, he would say things like, he didn't mean it, but he would say things like, oh, how much do you spend a week on shopping? He's like, I don't know, I didn't look at the price of stuff. And I was like, stuff like that. I was like, oh my God, I have to look at fucking the price of everything to make sure that I can afford it. And he was like, for me, it was like mindless frivolity. I was like, why have you bought water? It's in the tap. He's like, I don't know, I just prefer the taste. And I was like, and stuff like that was really getting me down. Or some of my mates were getting engaged, and I was like, God, I'm not there yet. And I was just constantly comparing myself to other people in other situations, people who are in a similar age to me. And then I was just like, fucking hell, they're doing so much better. And then that's where the feelings of worthlessness come from. And then I think that was compounded by people say, you know, my girlfriend at the time was saying, all your mates are going to wherever they were going on, and you can't go. I was like, no, I can't afford it. And she was like, oh, don't you want to go? I was like, yes, obviously I want to go, but I can't. It was just really like a feeling of, this is shit. I'm just not as good as them. I'm just completely worthless in comparison to them, and I'm never going to be in their situation, and this, that, and the other. And you know, those intrusive thoughts, they go around your head and go around your head and go around your head, and you're like, oh, fucking hell, like, you cannot shake it. And then when my girlfriend at the time dumped me, I was just like, yeah, see? And it was just like a validation of everything I'd been thinking. So it was just like, yeah, like, I'm not worth fucking anything. And I was like, I was heartbroken. Like, I did love her, but like, yeah. And from there, I just felt completely like worthless, empty. But then like, now I know that it's bollocks, isn't it? Because comparison is the thief of joy. Like,
it is, yeah.
Do not compare yourself to anybody else ever. And here's another thing I now do. I don't compare anything to anything ever. So if I had a coffee today that was better than the one yesterday, or worse than the one I had yesterday, I wouldn't think to myself, hey, this is better or worse than yesterday. I think, hey, this is a nice coffee. No, you know, and that is...
How have you conditioned your brain to do that? Because that's a fucking hard thing to do.
Yeah, really, really hard. So the first step in conditioning my brain to stop comparing myself to other people... and this come from a CBT lesson with, I can't remember her name, my third and final therapist. I like went through basically everything I just said with you, like, my friends earn more money, they do this, blah, 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 with her. And she said, oh, James, I'm on a low battery, I'm going to put it on charge. Are you still going to be able to hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, hang on.
Crack on.
Yeah, so she would say, so I listed all the things that I felt I was not as good as, in terms like my friends were, they are like in better shape than me, and that was eating me up and stuff like that. And then she said, okay, well, why are they friends with you then? And I was like, well, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? She's like, no, I'm asking you, why are they friends with you if you're all of these terrible things? Why are they friends with you? What is it that you're good at? And so I listed all of the things I was better than them at, and it's stuff like, well, not that I'm better than them at, but like the things
what
that
you,
make me
what you good. Perceive to be.
Yeah, and like, what makes me a good person? And it is things like, I'm caring, I'm funny, like, and when you list all these things out, you're like, actually, fucking hell, I'm great. Like, I'm really, really great. And so now, like, if my friends do really well, I don't get jealous. I'm just like, I'm like made up for them, and I'm like, fucking hell, this is amazing, this is brilliant. And I don't compare my situation to theirs, because everybody is on a different journey. And
how long has it taken you to do that?
Probably, I felt like it for maybe 2 or 3 years. I felt like shit. And then I'd say that maybe it took 3 months after that lesson of just like, there was a big moment of clarity, like a penny dropping during that lesson. And then pretty much from then, I've just been like, yeah, just don't compare. And I don't compare anything to anything, really. I only compare myself to, like, say, obviously there are things you compare, like, I want to do some walks longer than the other. So like, I need to walk further today than I did yesterday, but that's not a big deal. And I want to lose a bit more weight, so I need to compare where I was versus before. But in terms of like Like I say, we went on a night out, I wouldn't compare it to a night out I had at a different time. I would just enjoy that night out for what it was. And it's the same with everything. Literally, I don't compare meal to meal. I just enjoy tonight's dinner for what it is. And I won't compare it to what I made before. Or even if I made the same meal more than once, I won't think, God, this was better last time. I'll just think, okay, this is nice. Like, comparison really is a thief of joy.
And that's conditioned your brain over time to actually not compare anything. So it's bringing yourself, it's essentially bringing yourself back into the present 24/7, right?
Yeah, basically.
It's really interesting.
There's no point in living in the past or in the future because you're not there.
No.
You are just here all of the time. Mm.
Be the best person you can be right now and today.
Exactly. And I've, over like probably since the end of last summer, got quite a big belief in not God, but some people will call it God. I just call it the universe or the source energy. Mm. And I do truly believe that there's a higher power. And as long as you are living your best, not your best life, but as long as you're living to the best of your abilities and you're pushing positive energy into the universe, you will receive positive energy back.
What started that belief system?
So,
has it got anything to do with your nan dying?
No, not at all. Last summer I was drinking a lot, but it wasn't a huge problem, but I was starting to feel down and I was like, okay, am I down because I'm drinking or am I drinking because I'm down? I was like, I'm not sure. I'm just going to have a break. So I set off to do 100 days completely sober. During this time, I was just like, after about 2 weeks, I was like, I'm noticing stuff. I was like, I'm really, really noticing things. And so I started reading a couple of books, and I read a book called You Are a Badass by Jen Sincero. Mm. And she, in one of the first chapters, talks about, she's like, okay, we're gonna talk about the G word. She's like, God, whatever you want to call it. And she was saying that she calls it the source energy. And it's all just like pretty much what I'd been feeling. And I was like, I feel like energy and other stuff around me. So I was like, okay. So I just started to explore it. And then I was explaining it to my mate and he was like, yeah, I know. And I was like, you know? He's like, yeah, I know all about this. And I was like, oh, right. He's like, yeah, it's quite like, it's quite well known. I was like, it's not well known. Not everybody knows about it. And then I was watching a football match. So I was watching my friend Flo play football. She plays for the London Bees. And these guys had come to support their friend who also played for the team. And they were just like spitting, but pushing negative energy everywhere. Yeah. But I'd created in my mind, I'd created like this force field. And I was like, I could see they were doing it. And I was just like smiling. And my mate was like, what are you smiling at? I was like, they don't get it. Anyway, their friend took a penalty later in the game and missed. And so I was like, that's their fault. Not their fault, but I was like, if they'd have been positive and being like, come on, and like happy the whole game, she would have scored. But I truly believe that their negativity made the universe be like, all right. And they pushed it out and they got it back. And then there was a couple of other scenarios where I was just like, fucking hell, the universe works quickly. Like, one of my colleagues, it was only a small thing. He took loads of, so you know, on like iPhone, I've got a work iPhone. You can like swipe and get to the camera. He took like a million selfies or whatever whilst I was in the toilet. I came back and my phone had died, completely died. And he was like, he thought he'd broken it. And he was like, oh shit. And he'd like put it down and left it. And I was like, oh, my phone's dead, but it's just a work phone. I wasn't too worried. When it switched on, everything was back on, except for all of the photos that had been deleted.
Really?
And I was like, okay. And I just felt like I was being looked after. And there was a few other scenarios. I was just like, okay. And then it just made me realize, like, you live in the right way. You do your best. You put positive energy out and you will get it back. And so, yeah, this belief, like, particularly the last sort of 18 months is really like, I just like, yeah, just think about it. Like one of the things that you need to, well, I need to do and everybody should be doing is being grateful. So whereas before I was comparing my situation to everything, if I'd known then what I know now, I'd have woken up like I do today or every day I wake up and I think, okay, what am I grateful for today? And it's usually small things like my bed or today I'm grateful for the weather. you know, I haven't got the newest iPhone, but my God, I've got a phone. Like, that's phenomenal. I'm grateful for that. I've got clean running water. I'm grateful for that. My shower gets really hot. I'm in a new build, and that usually winds me up. But actually, I've got a shower, so I'm grateful for that. And everything that you can sort of potentially be annoyed about are now. So, for example, I bought a cafetiere, right, because I wanted a nice coffee during lockdown. Woke up and I was like, I could do it with an instant, man. I can't be waiting for this cafetiere to, like, so long. And I was like, do you know what? I've got the money to buy a cafetiere and the time to make cafetiere coffee. Oh, my God. I'm so lucky. So many people in the world won't have that. They won't have the luxury of waiting 5 minutes for this to do. Like, I've got that luxury. I've got 5 minutes in the morning to wait for coffee. And I do it twice. That's a real, real luxury. There'll be people who don't get to see their kids because they're rushed off their feet the whole time. Like, I haven't seen my friends and my family for ages, but I've got FaceTime, so I'm really grateful, and I'm grateful that they're there, you know. So
how's that impacted your life?
Oh, like, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Like, so because I was really down before, my friends and family still worry about me, and they can get a bit neurotic if I don't answer straight away.
Right.
But when they call me now and I'm like chirpy, and they're like, oh, we was really worried about you. I was like, why? Like, everything is great. Like, it's not great, obviously. The 35,000 people have died and we're all locked inside. It's obviously awful, but just try and pull the positives from it. And it's actually really nice to hear their voice. It's like almost surprised, like, oh, you're all right. And I'm like, yeah, I'm really good. And for quite a time, they don't believe me, but it's just great. And if you live with a positive energy, then people with negative energy can't affect you. And you can start to be positive energy is contagious. So, like, you must have like a friend who comes in and you're like, thank God they're here, and they lift everything up.
You've had 3 extended bouts of the rut or depression, anxiety. You've lost your nan, who was your best friend. When I lost my granddad, I described him as my soulmate, and I lost him as well. You've gone through 3 of those. You've, in the last 2 years, you've come out of one of the worst ruts you had, in which you had bouts of depression. You've had therapy, CBT, and now you are into this very different headspace of positivity, gratitude, extended mindfulness, and practicing that. How do you reflect back on that journey as Daz Clark? Because that is some journey.
Yeah. For most of it, I'm grateful. Shortly after university, my nephew died, and that was obviously horrendous. That may be a contributor. I'm not grateful for that or the death of my nan, of course. But I am grateful for the fact that I was down for that amount of time, because it has helped shape me, you know, into who the person I am today, and to live the way I do today. I've been really lucky in that a couple of friends of mine have reached out, you know, completely randomly, and was like, look, we know that you've been through it. Like, I'm struggling too. Can you help me? And I was able to help them out. And, you know, when you see this person get out of it, there was one guy, he texted me completely out of the blue, and I was messaging him, and he wasn't replying. And I knew why he wasn't replying, because he didn't want to talk to anyone, because I'd been there. And I knew that if I just didn't give up, eventually he would text me back. And we had like probably 9 months of just chatting over text. And then I went for a drink with him before lockdown, and he was just full of beans and like buzzing. And it was like unreal. So for me to go through it and then be able to guide somebody else through it, you know, just to see, well, just one person come out and then be buzzing, I was just like, do you know what? Even though it was shit for me for, you know, on and off for maybe 10 years, to see one person out of it at the other end does make parts of the hellish journey really, really worth it.
Very interesting. It's fantastic. Yeah.
And I would say that to anybody who's halfway there, like, keep at it. Like, even if you're right at the beginning of your rut, just keep at it, because when you get out, like, it's unreal. Like, it's a really like incomparable feeling of actually what it's not. That's not something that happens one day, but one day, you know, you'll wake up and you think, fucking hell, like, even though it's pissing down, life is really, really good. And, you know, there's so much to crack on with. And, you know, the small things, like, I feel like happiness comes from within. A lot of people feel like, oh shit, I need to get married and have kids and this is what it takes to be happy. But it isn't. Like, happiness can be like watching a film. You can just sit there content, or going for a nice walk. Or I used to walk for miles and miles and miles and miles when I was down, just to not feel sad. And you can actually walk it off, I found. But now I walk and I like smell the trees and I think, oh, that's a nice view. And I like take it in. Whereas before I would just head down, just walk in till I felt better. But yeah, when you come out, man, it's unreal.
I started this podcast to get men talking, and obviously you've done just that. But actually, if we go back to your first rut, it was the notion of actually reaching out to your mum and saying, actually help me, which in essence is what we're talking about here. Again, with the third rut and the second rut, going to therapy and talking that through, and understanding and exploring your feelings. How powerful, from somebody who's been in three extended ruts, how powerful is talking been for you in making that first step in recovery?
Yeah, so I've never been on any antidepressants or anything. I have only gotten out of my ruts through talking. And yeah, you know, what was surprising, I think, with each time I started talking, and I said, you know, I'd say to my mum or brother that actually, I'm not feeling very well. I'm not feeling myself. they went, yeah, we know. And I was just like, oh, like, how do you know? There's like, we can tell you're not being yourself. But they were very cautious and not going, by the way, you're depressed. Because I think that's a really bad thing. You know, somebody needs to get there by themselves. But the fact that when I opened up, they were like, yeah, we know. And then just to have a set of ears listening was phenomenal. And although I find it quite difficult to talk to my mum and brother at times because I don't want them to worry, my mates were unreal. They've been, you know, some of them have been through depression as well, and it's just so good, you know, just getting it off your chest. And you'll know yourself, the worst thing you can do is sit and have it whir around your own head. And you should never ever feel like you're being a burden to someone, because your mates probably, they want to listen and they want to know. And that's the first, and I feel the bravest step is telling someone and admitting it. And then when you go to therapy, I've had three sets of therapy on the NHS, and I've paid for a therapist as well. And when you talk to someone, and I don't know if you feel this, but you look at their eyes and it's like, oh shit, they understand. And then they'll say something that you might not have thought of, and then I didn't think of that.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It just gives it a new perspective. And it's really, really, really important to get new perspective, because honestly, as you know, when you're inside your own head, you're not giving yourself any room for perspective. It's just, I've got tunnel vision and this is what it is. But talking to somebody else and getting that perspective and sharing is just really, really good. It's the best, for me, it's the best thing for it. There's a group in the north called Andy's Man Club. And these guys get together. I've never been, obviously it's in the north, but I follow them on social media, and they're having like a real positive impact on men's mental health in the north, because they just get blokes together on like a Monday or whenever it is, they all have a cup of tea and they just share. And they're not so much anymore, luckily, but there was this real, as you know, a real stigma around manning up, and that seems to be fading, thankfully. And so, yeah, don't man up, do share. Like, they say a problem shared is a problem halved, but I think it more than halves if you know, the more you speak, the better it gets.
Yeah, it was everything for me. As soon as I spoke to Abby and my mum, it started this period of it started a period of, I knew I was going to hopefully recover, but actually I got worse before it got better. But I knew that because I'd spoken to somebody or a few people about it, I had those pillars next to me that if it got really bad, I'd be taken out of that situation entirely and put in a different one where I wouldn't be able to do anything terrible. But that's important, regardless of whether you're feeling bad or good, actually reflecting back on after the experience or during, at least you have the support network, and that's fundamental too.
Do you, did your mum and Abby know?
They didn't know for about 6 months. And then they did, when I told them, they basically said exactly what your mum and brother said. Like, we know that there's something been going on. You're just not being yourself. But for me, there was a compilation of different things, as you know, that shattered what I thought was my life and took them away from me, and I couldn't recover. But it happened very quickly. This spiral from going into prolonged, like, negative thoughts to and a little bit of anxiety to being suicidal happened in November, December, in 2 months. And that's quick.
Very quick.
It can be quicker. And there's no time frame on it, but the fact that I was able to get into that place purely because I didn't talk about it quick enough, and therefore I couldn't pick apart the different issues. And to be honest, since March now, I've been picking apart fundamental parts of my life, my belief systems, my core as a person, and having to begin to work out with help and therapists, but how I piece them together to live a more purposeful, fulfilled, and fundamentally happy life, or happier life, and that's been critical. I had so many belief systems that actually weren't really the belief system that I wanted in my life, but they were taking a stranglehold on me because that was the perception I had of myself, when actually there's an entirely different perception of me to or for other people. And that's where my self-esteem issues caused me huge harm, and they still do continue to do that. But the fact is, I know what they are, and I've explored them now to a level where I can almost eulogize about them, and that's really helped. And I know they are issues, but I also know they're getting better. And I know with each therapy session I go through, and each session I do with myself, where I'm exploring and I'm writing things down, or I'm meditating, or I'm picking out bits of my behavior that I know aren't quite right. Like, I'll give an example. With this podcast launching, I've been experiencing, I've had a lot of messages from people who have been like, this is amazing, and I've not really been able to enjoy them because I didn't really believe what I was doing was a good thing. I was doing it because I kind of felt like I needed to, for some reason, but I wasn't able to enjoy the gratitude that other people were giving me for opening up the conversation, getting men to talk. And I knew that wasn't the type of behavior that should be happening. I should be sitting there and being like, wow, yeah, this is a great thing. Let's do this. But I wasn't. And so I've had to sit there and pick apart for 2.5 hours with the therapist, like, why that was. And fundamentally, that's been because my entire life I've never felt that. I've felt this sense of worthlessness as well. And even when you do something good, you aren't able to recognize that you're doing something good, because actually you think it's just going to be worthless anyway. And that's been difficult.
This is a really good thing that you're doing, man.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else is doing a podcast like this. As I say, I've, like, other platforms have come to me, but I just didn't feel any sort of warmth towards them. Whereas this is completely different. And the Nick Friendo story the other day, the one I listened to last night, it did really move me. Like, I could sort of hear in his voice. This is a really important platform, and you should be really, really proud of what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm getting there. And this isn't me being like, oh, please give me some love. This is genuinely how I've felt. I wonder how many other people have done things in their life which actually to the outside world has been really good things to do, and they've not been able to enjoy it because they don't believe in themselves, and that's the core of who they are.
Robin Williams, man.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, there's so many, and you know, you're not on your own. This is natural, but I would write down your achievements, man. When they're written down, they can't escape you.
No, it's true.
It's just the universe. It's just the universe saying to you, "Look, that wasn't the right path."
No.
It is fine to go down the wrong path. That is one of the points of life. Mm. And when the universe corrects you, you just have to accept it. So I wouldn't beat yourself up. Definitely not about those other things. There's like a million startups. I don't know how many there are, but not, you know, how many don't actually start up, you know?
I mean, the vast majority fail, so.
Exactly. It's what a challenging thing. Like, oh, well done. Like, what it was something that I, yeah, when I split up with, not my most recent, so the girl I was talking about before, my therapist was like, yeah, 90% of relationships fail, like you're in the majority. And I was like, okay, that doesn't make me feel any better. He's like, one day it will. And he was right. Like, I was just like, oh, shit. And I do sort of tell him when a friend of mine split up with their other half, and I said, oh, well, you're in the majority. And they were like, oh, that doesn't help. And then like a few weeks later, they're like, yeah, it's just one of those things that happens.
It's what it is.
It is what it is. It is what it is. And I've seen that a lot recently online and stuff like that. But like, it's true. Like, it is what it is. Mm. Like. Mm. And you can't control what happened in the past. So don't I think it's really great what you're doing. Like,
well, we'll get there and we'll see if we can get as many men talking as possible. And that's really my mission at the moment. And actually, what I've learned about my journey so far is that I've always felt like I've had a lack of purpose, a lack of fulfillment with whatever I did. And I obviously now understand that's kind of because I haven't quite found the right path for me yet. But having a purpose is actually very, it's almost transient. It's quite fluid. It can change year by year. I always felt that, okay, well, if you have got a purpose, that is your lifelong destiny. And therefore I've been searching for years of like, what am I doing on this planet? Why am I doing it? And there's millions and millions of men and women as well who are constantly like, okay, well, what's my purpose? And it grates on them. But actually, it's when you're not constantly thinking about it, you begin to realize what it might be, and you can begin to open your eyes up to what you're doing in the world and what you're doing with your projects and what you're doing with your time, and actually what makes you fundamentally passionate as a person. Having a gratitude journal has been great for me with that, where I've been able to sit there and every night before I go to bed, I write three things that I've been grateful about. And I've just started actually to write the three wins of the day. It has a different effect, but looking back, you begin to pick out themes in that journal where you're able to focus more of your energy because you know it's going to make you feel good about yourself. You know, it's something you enjoy, and that's been critical for me to come out of my ruts.
Yeah, it's good. Sounds like a worthwhile exercise.
Yeah, man. Look, Daz, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, you're welcome.
And sharing your story.
Sometimes I go off piste a bit, so mate, sorry if you have to try and pick the bones out of it.
No, we're a pretty open podcast, so we often go down dark corridors sometimes and come out the other side with the light. But I'm so grateful for you sharing your story. I know that there's going to be a lot of people out there who've experienced similar levels of grief, and it is manifested in a variety of different ways. But you're in an amazing place now, so that's amazing.
Thank you, mate. Thank you for having me on, and carry on this really, really good work.
No problem. Take care.
Cheers.
See you soon.
Thanks.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening, supporting the podcast. Please subscribe if you haven't already, and find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn through @TheRutPod for more updates on who's coming up next on the show. Special thanks to my team, Ricky Batchu and Phil Bateman, for helping me produce The Rut. Next week on the podcast, and for the final episode of this season, I sit down with my brother Tom, who opens up about his mental health issues, which for our family have been a, uh,
a source of discomfort for a quite a long time because we've seen him suffer. But I'm so pleased to welcome him and have a brotherly chat. See you then.